everybody. Welcome to the PC Perspective Podcast. This is episode 500.
And one.
Nope, just 500. It's May 23rd, 2018. I'm Ryan Schrout.
I'm Jeremy Hellstrom.
I'm Josh Walrath.
And I'm Alan Malventano.
We've got Ken and Alex sitting behind the desk.
You ever think you're going to make it to 500?
Look, you can see Jim's elbow.
Ooh,
do you know that nice Jim elbow. Is a handsome man?
That's a good elbow.
Like when you're nice.
He's rather stunning. Oh, yeah. He has a certain olive cast to his skin.
He just looks over.
Well, he's
like,
not listening. What would he know?
We're not Chinesa talking Quash about Will. You.
Not talking about Jim for sure. I never when I started the first episode, did I think I'd make it to 500? No.
Do you think you'd make it to 5?
I didn't think Yuli and I would make it to 5.
I mean, I was pretty confident.
Around number 33, when you added me in, you thought it was going to go just downhill quickly from there.
And it did.
A flaming meteor of despair.
Thinking about it, you know, it's 500, but we didn't count some episodes. Like the CES podcasts that we did was sometimes 3 or 4 a week during CES.
I mean, those were the only ones we didn't count.
Those weren't counted. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Probably not. But you know, that's probably another.
No, I guess the 12-hour stream didn't count.
Yeah, but it's probably talking 20, maybe 30 max episodes that, you know, things that were recorded that weren't included, right? Because some CESs we didn't do any and all that. But yeah. Anyway, we'll get to the 500 whatever BS here in a little bit. We are still recording live. We do that on Wednesday nights, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern at pcpro.com/live. You can see our live.
You
stream.
Know what? I'm extremely happy. I hate to interrupt like this.
No, you don't.
No, you don't.
You don't
so
hate it.
So happy that we do not record dead.
500 episodes for that joke?
There's nothing special about this 500 podcast, apparently.
You're right.
Not at all.
This, you are correct. There's literally nothing special about this episode, which may be disappointing to many. PCPro.com/live. If you want a reminder for that, you can go to PCPro.com/subscribe. You get this page here. That asks for your name and your email address. We send you an email that says, hey, we're going to do a thing. Please come to this website. We also have our Patreon campaign running. That is at patreon.com/PCPer. This is your place to become a regular, recurring, monthly contributor to us, helping pay for things like video editing and people to be here and articles and stuff. And we greatly appreciate each and every person that is a patron, as is always the case. If you become a new patron or increase your patronage during the show, I will read off your name on the show as well. So you'll be included in this video and audio forever, which I think for the 500th episode is like a special treat, right? Mm-hmm. Think of how many people will go back in time 10 years in the future when we're on episode 1,000 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, God, I wonder what was happening back in the past, and they'll just pick a number like 500, and that's what they'll come up with.
How far can they go?
Do you
back
honest
right now?
To God think that someone is going to do that?
Yes, because we have had people on the show ask us why our podcast feed only goes back to like 7, I think.
No, it's like
30.
Yeah, I want to say like I think Josh actually. It's like when Josh came on almost.
Those are the episodes I really wanted to save.
Yeah.
I think I found back to like episode 7 on some old hard drives and stuff, but never back to episode 1. Those were bad. You really don't want to listen to them. But anyway, patreon.com/PCPer, and we thank each and every person that helps us out in that way. And if you become a new patron in episode 500, then you're an extra special contributor.
That's hey, think not about true, this. Think that seriously, interrupting.
Yeah,
but
no, we
wasn't
know.
Like
we
the first 100 biweekly.
Not the first 100.
No, I think we started out every week, and then we reverted to biweekly.
Yeah, when I was first on, it was biweekly, and you would often call me. So are you going to join the podcast? And I was like, oh, well, I'm very, very shit-faced, but sure, go ahead.
I mean, it did start 5 minutes ago, so.
Yeah.
It was weekly by the time I came around, and the first podcast I posted was 77, it looks like.
Really? You were pre-100?
Yeah.
I am curious if anybody can find the date for like the first couple of episodes. I think it's been more than 10 years. If there was any length of time where we were bi-weekly.
Well, Podcast 77 was on October 8th, 2009, so it has to be
more than 10 years. Okay. Yeah. All right. So there you go. We also have our mailbags. There's a couple of them this week. There's one episode number 43. It looks like this, Making Poor Decisions with Josh Walrath, which is a constant theme of this website in reality. And then we have this episode, which is just plain old me. No fancy subtitle on that one.
But are people walking in the background?
Yes. Normally. Nice. Yeah. I'm sure Ken walks by here at some point. Oh, wait. What's that?
Certainly not doing work.
Ken.
It's not important.
Oh. Well, it's all important.
But it really is. Now you're committed.
Nah, I'm not going to fight it. And what else we have? Oh, we have our merch store. What better way to celebrate 500 episodes than buying a Josh Tech t-shirt at joshtech.com, J-O-S-H-T-E-K-K. Get you this website here.
I still want to get one of those canvas prints. I'm going to get one.
You need a canvas print. You can get a mug and you can get a t-shirt, which I don't know why I can't. Oh, I'll just click on it and we'll do it that way. So there you go. Don't worry. Delivery before Father's Day with standard shipping. So this is the perfect gift to get for your dad, who's like, what the hell is this?
Shut up, dad.
And then shut up, dad.
I mean, he's got early onset dementia, so it really confused him. Thank you.
Oh, man. That's good stuff. A little depressing.
That's your son, but, Josh. You know. Didn't you know?
Gained a little weight.
Yeah, well, you know, it happens. And obviously, we still have our PC Per shirt. We have our Death Wish Raid shirt. All of those goodies can be found at joshtech.com, and we appreciate everybody who buys stuff from there. And then what else we got on here? Oh, yeah, we still got our EVGA May giveaway going, where we're giving away some cases, some motherboards, some keyboards, some coolers, some power supplies. I believe it's, what do I say here, $2,200, over $2,200 worth of hardware. Being given away. That is on the front page of the website right now. Just go to pcper.com. Lots of ways to enter, from subscribing to the PC Per podcast, signing up for the mailing lists, following us on Twitter, following EVG on Twitter, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then there is one here that's important. This is the one entry per day bonus entry. All you have to do is come back and click this button once a day.
Because everybody wants the bonus entry.
Feel better.
And don't forget,
we don't have audio hooked up to your laptop.
But that's why they have subtitles there.
It's going to be May.
It's fine. All right. So before we get into the first story, we are going to quickly reminisce about how awesome having 500 episodes is. I think we did this a little bit already. But I asked on Twitter, and this is always dangerous. What have you learned? What do you like most? What do you wish would come back? Who's the best looking? Any comments that you could come up with about the 500th episode? And we had some good comments here. Peter J. Cavan commented that 10 nanometer is hard. That's true. Cheap graphics cards are good, but probably Josh is the best looking. So this is probably an inaccurate statement.
He's biased. So biased.
This is probably the best thing that exists. this collection of photos from Anthony, these Photoshops. This might be my favorite. Alan's face is clearly distorted. It doesn't really
that's just how he looks.
Sebastian looks like Putin in
I think I look damn good in this
speaking, I'll give you that.
I mean, this is probably still the best CNN reskin where Ryan would totally sell out for $1 billion, probably even less.
SSD still not 10 cents a gig.
SSD is still not 10 cents a gig. Yeah, popular as fidget spinners. There is the Man Award winner.
We still haven't used that for something.
Runner-up. There's another me as Han Solo here, which is good. Josh is Obi-Wan here, which I feel is factually inaccurate.
Did the Brian Moltavino picture make it so?
I didn't see that one in here. This is also pretty good.
I'm Julia Roberts in this one.
Ken's Photoshop looks pretty good in that one. I'd use that as my Twitter thing if I were you. There's
my eyes with the sunglasses. Terrible.
That's pretty good. There we go.
That was so good.
And then there's another one. I don't remember this one. It must have been on an episode I wasn't on or something, maybe. I don't know.
I think you're around. It just wasn't.
Scroll down just a little bit more. The first comment's pretty good.
Yeah, so this is from somebody who found this, story for no reason.
Like, what is this thing?
My favorite was always the I'm the bishop. Yeah. You guys are priests and altar boys. Sebastian is an altar boy.
Yeah, that's pretty epic.
Good. This is a good comment from Lucas. Says, listener since 2012, the podcast has introduced me to whiskey, processor fabrication, SETI at home, electronics basics, and overall motivated me to pursue an education in comp sci with a focus in software engineering. Hashtag
are watching us.
Hashtag mineral oil intern. What's the lobsters and magnets?
It's the lobster sticks to magnets song. We've talked about that extensively.
I don't remember anything about that.
Yeah, lobster sticks to magnet. We have talked about it.
I believe you.
You guys are all getting old.
I might have inadvertently taught that guy something about soldering in the past.
Eric says he got into PC Pro after hearing me on Twitch, the show I do on the Twit Network, and he loves it because it feels less supervised. Supervised. The other show, which basically just means the other show doesn't have Josh on
So, I'm not there to ruin everything.
Yep.
Yeah, it's apparently this chip here. I posted an ad. I did like an ad spot on my brother and me when
I remember that. I was like, why in the hell is he advertising with those guys? And we played a little bit, and it's like Pussy Control.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. They played a song of, and then they thought it was a drug related thing, and it was funny, right? And I wasn't doing it to really get new readers or listeners. It was more like I like these guys, I want to support their podcast. And now, of course, they're an enormous thing. They have a TV show, and they, you know, Jimmy Buffett invites them to shows and stuff. So clearly, that's all because of the ad that I was able to run.
Clearly, we're the successful ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Terry says he learned to build computers here. Discovered us during his college time. It's good to read things like this, you know, that we exist, that people listen. I could listen to Alan talk about storage for hours.
These are just Russian bots.
They're all Russian bots.
It loves the Sebastian appearances.
So someone found the archive.org listing for podcast 001.
Yeah.
I think we should put that in the RSS feed along with this one.
Okay.
Tomorrow.
I think we should just play it and sit back and listen.
We should relist podcasts. Oof.
I don't know. You might want to see that.
Does it actually work? Does the podcast link work? Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
It does. Valid MP3.
Yeah, that's a good.
I haven't listened to it because
somebody in the chat tell me what the date of episode one is. Is it 2006?
It's 2008. November 20th is what it says. Mm.
Well, that's archive.org.
That's the archive, though.
And that can't be right.
Yeah. If you listen to the audio, if the audio is actually there, surely I. Very quietly enunciate completely the date.
you got to listen to this, Ryan. You won't even recognize yourself.
With some copyright music at the beginning of it.
Welcome to the Jungle in the first one?
I did Welcome to the Jungle early, but I picked a different song every week.
Yeah.
Right? I picked some different MP3 as the lead-in to it, which seemed great at the time.
Can you even put episode number one in the RSS based on that?
I mean we nobody have to polices I mean, whatever. That.
We'll just have to.
What are they going
to do? Just link it straight to archive.org.
That won't work. Now we'll throw up an S3 and then just.
Archive.org almost never works reliably anyway.
Yet somehow they have episode one.
But 500 episodes is a long time, and we thank people who listen for whatever reason it might be. I don't know what else to say. Anybody else have any comments on it? I mean, it's been a super damn long time. I told my wife tonight, it's like, I came home for dinner and I said, I gotta go. I said, I'm really tired. I gotta go back to the show and do the podcast. She's like, okay. I was like, it's episode 500. And she kind of stopped. She was like, really? I was like, yeah, this is 500th one of these I've done, or some close proximity, because I've missed many.
You've worked late for 500 nights?
Yeah, and you remember, I used to do Twitch on late nights as well. Thursdays, like, it was 9 p.m. on Thursdays. Mm-hmm. So, for almost 10 years straight, every Wednesday night, here we are doing this.
Yeah, I know.
Doing this thing.
Who do you think's missed the fewest?
Missed the fewest?
Yeah.
Probably Jeremy.
Yeah.
Probably right.
On bi-yearly ice fishing vacations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's that
was
true.
But he was around earlier than I was.
I mean, up until a few years ago, I would
say
me.
You will hear my voice on that episode one.
Yeah, so I mean, Jeremy's been in most of them.
Yeah, if we count the total, it's probably Jeremy. If we count up to the most, it could have been.
He might have been in more of them than you.
It's very possible.
Oh, definitely.
That's
not a maybe. That's a definitely.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think
Jeremy's the podcast host now.
Jeremy's just it now.
Move on to our first story and stop being sappy about stuff, we have patrons to thank. Dylan Patel is a new pledge for $5. Thank you, Dylan. Greatly appreciate it. I eat urinal cakes for breakfast. Just They're edited crunchy. Their pledge from $5 to $10. I mean, they smell nice. I don't know.
I might have been a sale on them, so I could afford more.
Green. Minty fresh breath.
And Josh Spice just pledged $3 as a new patron. So thank you,
Josh Spice.
Thank you very much for that. And I have a new GDPR email from Fullscreen. So there you go. Delete that. Moving on. So if you guys have any more funny comments, feel free to interject whenever you wish. Josh never holds back, so why should anybody else? That's fine. All right. Stuff happened this week. Actually, we missed last week, too. So stuff happened in the last 2 weeks. We'll run through them in a relatively quick manner, as we always do here. We're very
short-winded.
We're not verbose. What's the opposite of that? What's the...
Unsupervised?
No.
Calvin Coolidge is verbose. The opposite of that.
I know. I was making... Never mind. Ken's going to tell us about a caching server. It's as exciting as it
you
sounds.
You mean a caching server.
Caching. Yes. Sorry. Jeremy's here. It's you have a caching.
To speak appropriate. There's Canadian.
Steal stuff. My thunder, why don't you?
Ken, why would I want to build a Steam cache?
Cache.
Because you have ridiculous demands and download games from Steam over and over way too often, like us.
Yeah. Or
you run a LAN party.
You run LAN party. And it could be a small one. Like it could be like 10 guys.
Yeah.
You know? The idea is basically you intercept the traffic request that a Steam client makes through this caching server. Mm-hmm. And if the game already exists in the caching server, you serve it locally. It's faster, et cetera, right?
Yeah.
And how
you just do a different DNS.
Yeah.
Use a different DNS.
It was way easier than I expected it to be, apparently.
Can you just do like host file riverbed? Host file is iffy?
Not quite, because the Steam content servers kind of changed. Oh,
okay.
So there are two parts of this, essentially. There's the sort of DNS part of it. Both of these run in Docker containers, so completely containerized applications inside a Linux that have a Linux environment inside of them that you can run on Windows or Linux. Linux is more recommended for Docker because development tools on Windows can be kind of a pain in the butt sometimes.
Yeah.
But essentially, you have the DNS container, which is just running a DNS server, and it is acting just like a local DNS server. So every request you make is going through it and seeing if it has the local copy of the DNS. Mm-hmm. And if so, it isn't hopping out to the internet DNS server. Mm-hmm. But they keep an updated list of all of the CDNs for all the game services. So this goes beyond Steam. You can do Origin. You can do Uplay. You can do Blizzard, Battle.net. You can do all of this sorts
Windows
of stuff.
Updates.
Yeah, Windows updates even. So if you're trying to access one of those servers, it just redirects it to the IP address of the other Docker container, which is running an HTTP proxy, doing what you described earlier, monitoring the traffic and kind of caching all of the contents that go through it.
So if it didn't have the thing cached, and say you're doing a LAN party at your place or something, and the first person goes to download that game, your connection only downloads the game one time.
Yeah.
Got it.
So good for bandwidth limited situations. Good if you have a couple people over to play PC games in LAN setting. You have a 20 megabit connection. And you all need to download a 2 gig patch.
Yeah. Right.
And the other bonus is it's fast.
Yeah. So this all started because we had a gigabit. We still have a gigabit connection. We used to be able to download from Steam at 110 megs per second. Mm-hmm. We can no longer do that. We kind of peak at 50, 60.
Yep.
Sometimes we hit 20, 30 megs per second, and it just annoyed the piss out of me.
Yep. And it's not our connection's fault. It's just
No. We can download from other places. Well, whatever.
We can hit fast.
It's hard. Yeah. We can speed test higher than that, if nothing else.
Uplay in particular is actually pretty good at maxing our connection still.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, really? Origin was too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Origin was hitting, 70s, 80s megabytes per second as well.
And also, we're frequently downloading the same game.
We are.
Right? Like, we're testing
ahead. We've got about the same 10 titles that we use for testing at any given time.
Right.
Be it notebooks, desktops.
Notebooks. We're doing storage testing. Yeah. We're trying to what happens if we load this level, right? Up, download that game. And we had tried doing things where you download to a, we back up the game to a file server.
Yeah.
But honestly, the process of transferring that file over and having Steam, validate it.
Yeah, re-import it.
Was like longer than just re-downloading it. At least it was when we were running at 110 megs per second on gigabit.
Right.
And then that went away.
And so now this way you always have an up-to-date version cached, whereas you would have to, like, if there's a 1 gig patch, you would have to re-export the game, or you have to download the patch when you installed it. And just the whole backup mechanism doesn't work all that well in Steam. It's not very efficient. If that worked just like a normal file transfer, that's what we would do all the time, of course.
Sure.
That would make the most sense.
Agree. Yeah. So what hardware did we use for this?
So we're actually running this in a Linux VM on the sort of the new Office NAS that we've been experimenting with. This is a QNAP TS877 based on a full desktop Ryzen 7 1700 CPU.
This is a really cool piece of hardware.
Yeah.
Regardless of this discussion, this is actually a really interesting piece of hardware.
What GPU is in that thing currently?
There's no GPU in
it. Oh, what did we have in there at one point?
We had a 1080
in there.
A 1080 fits in there.
Yeah, it's got PCIe expansion. It's got a power supply with additional connections so you can hook up stuff.
So what we added to it was a 10 gigabit Ethernet card.
Yeah.
Right?
It's just hilarious that can literally be your desktop PC.
Because that's what you do.
Yeah. We had the 10 gig NIC in it, and we also added two 1 terabyte 840 EVOs in a RAID 0 configuration. Obviously, we're not really worried about the data integrity of our cache. Like if the array crashes, we just download it again.
Yeah.
So we're going for maximum throughput for our 10 gig network. So we have 2 terabytes of caching capability.
Right.
A little less than that. It's more like 1.75 or something like that with formatting and the OS and everything of Steam cache, so that we, in theory, won't really run out.
Yeah.
We'll never really run anything off the end of the cache for
probably
a year or so, I would imagine, if not a little longer.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like we're trying to download a whole bunch of different Steam games. It's usually the same set, and it's less than, you know, it's way less than 2 terabytes worth. So
what were the results?
We got to about a little over 250 megabytes a second through Steam with 10 gig NICs on both sides. This capture was a little less, but I think I saw it get above 250. Now you have to have fast storage on the download side. This is going to like a Optane P4800X, just something that we knew we weren't bottlenecking. Mm-hmm.
Would you consider this? So again, I think there's limit. The average person doesn't want to do this, right? If you're
on a bandwidth constrained, like, you know, you're living out on a farm or something.
Yeah, but if it's just you.
Yeah, but if you're just downloading the games computer to a hard drive and you need to re-download the games,
like
if you have a super slow connection, it couldn't.
If you have ADSL extended range,
but that means you can either have that storage locally in your computer, or you can have it in your caching server.
Yes,
right. So at that point, you have one copy of it, or whatever. Just keep it locally.
That's true.
Yeah. Right.
I'm thinking back to college when I lived in a house with a couple of roommates, and we were all playing PC games. Like, this would have been a cool thing to set up.
Yeah, four guys
point.
In an apartment.
Yep.
A fraternity house with 20 people, something like this. You set up, and it suddenly is very useful. Obviously, if you host LAN parties on a semi-regular basis, or you know you're going to host a LAN party for 10 or 15 guys, this is a good idea. If you're going to host a LAN party at, you know, this surely, like, QuakeCon does something like this, right? Surely.
Yes.
Those guys are trained professionals at this.
On a way bigger and better scale.
Yeah. But, like, something to this effect of, well, we don't want people to kill our fiber connection with AT&T by downloading patches or downloading these popular games.
I think they would set up, like, a legit, like, Steam server. Like one of their,
maybe, but you have to have interactions with Valve for that.
It's not something you can just
Valve
do in your
want to set up Steam server.
Yeah, I don't think Valve's going to let you have a server locally for that. Because, I mean, in reality, you probably put whatever the most popular 50 games are, and then you let the rest of them go through.
Yeah.
Or no, you probably just cache it on demand, right? So it's a really interesting idea. I don't think it's not applicable to everybody.
It's not applicable to most people, but.
But you thought overall it was fairly easy to set up and get going?
Yeah, you need to learn a little bit about how Docker works and containers work, but it was kind of a fun project to wade into that stuff in general. It's kind of like learning about modern web technologies and stuff like that.
And that just the big part was getting the DNS moved over to the internal Docker image to do the proper resolution.
Yeah. And so we're not actually running all of our DNS through this yet because we kind of want to battle test it. In theory, running all of our machines' DNS through it would make sense because we'll just get faster DNS requests because we have several less hops out to the internet to hit a DNS server every time we want to make a request that we don't have cached locally on our machine. However, we just haven't really switched it all over yet. We're currently setting the DNS manually in the NIC settings of each computer.
For the
I go to download a bunch of data on Steam. I change the DNS server in Windows to our local one. Yeah. Kind of shuffle everything through that.
Right.
It's sort of a go-between if you don't want to send all of your DNS through this random sort of VM Docker container situation.
Got it. Very cool. Check that out. It's on the site. Neat idea. What else we got? Oh, Lee posted a review of the Corsair RMX series 850-watt power supply. Corsair, well-known to continue to produce high-quality units. This new family is five models, 1,000 watts down to 550 watts.
I feel like they kind of been out for a special while, right? Like
these RMX?
Yeah, like I bought those like a year ago almost, I think.
Yeah, I don't know if this is a different revision or perhaps just a new capacity that we haven't looked at yet.
Probably just hadn't reviewed the 850
10-year yet. Warranties, 80-plus gold. These aren't like your platinum-level power supplies, but this has an MSRP of $159 instead of, say, $359 along the way. Fully modular, high-end units. This is something that...
Just these power supplies in general, we have a bunch around the office.
Yeah,
like pretty much all of our test beds have these.
RMX 1000s.
Yeah, the RMX 1000s.
Yeah.
I have several RMX 850s at home.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think we've had a single failure.
No.
I don't think we have.
Like, we have all over the place.
8 to 10 of them in this office.
Yeah, these were the power supplies that when I, you know...
We got annoyed because we had other ones
fail. Corsair calls and says, hey, what do you need for the next couple of months of stuff? I was like, well, we're rebuilding GPU test beds or CPU test beds, whatever. You know, could you send me four or five of these units just so we have them on hand? They go, yeah, sure. And they've been very good, very reliable, no problems. Every power supply should be fully modular from this point forward, I kind of believe.
Yeah, really. They should just all be that way.
There doesn't seem to be any detriment to it at this point. Here's the internal pick for Ken, as we always
Wait, it looks
have.
Like, scroll up a little bit. It looks like two hands holding above Corsair.
Right here.
Aww.
Yeah. Aww.
Little power supply robot hands.
Mm-hmm. So did you do the urine test on it?
No.
Did we pee on the power supply? Is that what you're asking me?
Well, who doesn't?
Mm. We can add that as a request for Lee for future reviews if you'd like.
It's going to be a Patreon-only feature.
He already did arc welding.
I mean, the RMX 1000 is $189. So if you need a 1,000-watt power supply, which is not a lot of people that are using 1,000-watt power supplies at this point, and then, you know, $550 down to $114 as well. So
how come the special white is $20 more expensive than the special black?
Because it's special.
It's special.
Special.
Painting white. Painting stuff
standard,
white is
hard. Standard black.
That's gold racist. Award from Lee on this. Yeah. Gold award from Lee on this. Check it out if you're looking for a high quality unit like that. Changing title or changing directions completely is the Samsung C49HG90. This is a monitor. A FreeSync 2 monitor that is a 49-inch ultra-wide. And Ken asked the question...
It's like super ultra-wide.
How wide?
I don't even know if ultra-wide is the right...
Wide.
Is that even the right term?
I don't know if ultra-wide has a specific like aspect ratio.
I feel like it needs to with this monitor. But
maybe they can do the EVGA thing. UUW.
Yeah.
I was debating calling this a super ultra-wide. That seems like what the
legitimate?
Industry would call
You think
call
that's
it.
What it is?
No.
No, you think they should?
I think it's what they would call it.
Okay.
They're coming
yeah, because it's definitely wider than your normal ultra-wide panel.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so here's a picture of this guy. So, like, if you look at the icon, this is the Samsung-provided imagery. It doesn't look particularly wide there. It doesn't mm-hmm. feel different. But if you look at it here, you start to see that this is quite different. It's a... not a 21x9. What is this, Ken?
It's a
32x9.
Yeah.
32x9.
Yeah, it's 2 16x9s.
So let's suppose you had 2 27-inch 1080p monitors.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you shoved them next to each other.
Yeah.
And took the bezel out the middle. There you go.
It's this one.
It's a 3840x1080.
Bend them a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to flex them. You got to get them wet and moist.
Yeah,
so that they flex.
No, just really? like plastic friction welding. You just rub them.
Do you have to do a hair dryer?
Yeah, a hair dryer would help too. One thing that's interesting. So these are curved displays. What are they? 1800R.
They're mostly. Yeah. I didn't like the way that they did the curve.
So this is interesting. This picture. It's kind of hard to see a little bit, but Ken, you said that like the last 4 or 5 inches of it or 6 inches of it are straight. They're not curved.
Yeah. So on like both the left and the right side, it kind of flattens out. And Alan is actually the one that noticed this to begin with.
Yeah, I noticed it, like, just sitting in front of it, like, immediately.
Did he get out his protractor?
No. It's dead obvious. Like, when you sit in front of it, it's dead obvious. Because if you have, like, something diagonal across a screen and you're looking at it, it really, like, is not... It's already hard with a screen that's curved that the straight lines are not necessarily straight lines. And you kind of have to, adjust for that mentally. You can't do that with this one because it's not even a steady curve.
I mean, you can't really tell if you're looking at it head on like you're supposed to be. But if you're at all off axis, you can kind of see the parallax effect of when it goes straight.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. It's not really a deal breaker at all. It's just an interesting.
Yeah. It's as if you had a 27-inch screen that was curved in front of you, but then you took another 27-inch screen, cut it in half, and just that was not curved, and kind of tacked those on.
That's exactly what they
do. Do we think this is a production issue, or did they do this for some technological or visual?
I think it's just bend it all the way to the ends, damn it.
No, I think it's just a packaging and the frame, because you would have had to make the frame potentially even thinner.
Think of how much extra packaging you had to do to ship one of these.
Yeah.
Curved monitors are like that in general, right?
Right, but that would have added another couple of inches of depth to the panel.
Yeah, so another 4 inches
to curve
of box.
It some more, right?
Yeah.
Interesting. So, I mean, I get it, but it's just like it's weird. Right?
You mentioned the stand. Ken has a pretty big footprint.
Yeah,
depth or width or
depth and width.
Okay,
for the most part. I mean, just to support a 49-inch semi-curved panel, like it's a really
that's
large
really
panel,
wide.
And you have to support that weight somehow. Yeah. So you're using a lot of sort of wide
real
depth
estate.
In your desk.
Yeah.
It.
Now it is shallow though. It's like flat. Like the stand where it comes out towards you just runs flat on the desk.
Yeah.
Sure.
Like there's other like Acer Predators and stuff where it's just like a triangulated, like the legs kind of like come down, right? Those are just like it's just like
but
a flat
I think if they're
stand.
Flat, they take up more space than if they're sort of curved up.
That's
sort
true.
So let's talk about the other specs. We said 3840 by 1080. This is a FreeSync 2, which insinuates variable refresh. It has that capability. It also insinuates some kind of HDR capability. In this case, Visa HDR 600 standards support, which is what?
Beyond, I think it's like a 90% Adobe RGB typical coverage, I think, is the spec for color gamut.
It says Samsung quotes all the way up to typical 92%, minimum 88% Adobe RGB.
So it's somewhere around 90% Adobe RGB that you need to hit. Beyond that, the backlight has to be able to hit 600 nits for a 10% chunk in the middle.
Sustained. Yeah.
As well as 600 nits for an instantaneous flashing of the screen to white.
I wonder how instantaneous is.
Well, we just watched
there's a
spec.
A third of a second?
Yeah, I didn't
know. Is it less than that or something?
I don't know.
Curious.
I don't know.
I don't need you to answer it for me.
There is a spec, but basically a brief flash of the whole screen, like to 600.
Would you say the hertz was on this again? Is it 60 or
no,
above?
It's higher than 60, right?
It's what is it? It's a 144
display port. You can get to 100.
So
through
it's
HDMI.
Got the VRR range of 48 to 144 hertz via display port, 48 to 100 hertz via HDMI. So
that's beautiful.
The variable refresh range is actually pretty good, and the range is wide enough that the low frame rate compensation stuff all works.
And the resolution is low enough that it's easy to drive at above 60 hertz.
Yeah.
Because 1080p displays.
Yeah. Any other? I think what we would say here is, we weren't really impressed with the HDR on this panel.
No, it didn't really. Wasn't really. Oh, just
excuse me.
Pour that drink on yourself.
I'm fine.
At least I get on the laptop.
It's only my shorts.
Suck the bourbon out of him.
Quick, cut back to him when he takes them off.
Please don't.
You can bend that far?
No, I just take them off and then you suck the pants out.
Oh. Detachable.
Right. So about that HDR, huh?
Yeah.
it smells mighty fine over here now.
So why?
Well, we did some testing with some games and some video playback, and you can tell some sort of highlights on the screen, but it doesn't really get bright enough to set any content off. Like, I know you have an HDR display TV at home. I have an HDR TV at home, and I'm pretty used to that experience, and this just doesn't deliver on it.
Did you like watch Blade Runner 4K HDR 2049?
I didn't watch Blade Runner. I watched
on Coco. The monitor. You mean? What I'm curious about is, do we have a different perspective because we have had these TVs?
I think so.
Yeah,
I think the TVs are kind of spoiling us for the experience. I mean, like, there's just not a whole lot of difference between looking at the SDR image and looking at the HDR image on this monitor, which is a shame.
And if you're getting it because of the HDR and you potentially want to watch HDR, like, video content on it, like film.
If HDR is one of your top two selling points, I wouldn't buy this display.
Right.
I would wait to see what comes because we've got some news later in this podcast that stuff is coming and just sort of this first wave.
It's a quickly evolving
market. Yeah. This first wave of HDR PC displays is disappointing. I know Jim's taking a look at one that's kind of doing the same thing. It's just they're not really hitting the levels they need to.
Yeah.
And it's a difficult problem. I'm like, putting that many local dimming zones into a desktop-sized panel has to be a very, very difficult problem.
Is that what the bottleneck is, do you think? Is it zoning?
Just zoning and having enough LEDs to produce enough brightness. And having the greater
A TV in a bigger format has more space for more LEDs, more
zones. Yeah, you put a 384 zone backlight in a that's capable of producing around 1,000 nits into a 55-inch TV. It's way easier to do than into a 27-inch monitor or a 49-inch ultra-wide.
So can I throw in two positives and a negative for this?
Absolutely. For
me? You may.
Okay, as a user who is using three monitors with a really low internet bandwidth. This may be really grim. Anyway, eventually I will remove the Vaseline from my camera. But okay, I've got three monitors. They're all 1920 by 1200. I've got it in, you know, SLI surround. But it's still three monitors. Yeah. And they're old. They're 60 hertz. So this is, I would get three quarters, essentially, of the same experience because I don't have to deal with bezels. I've got 144 hertz, which is awesome.
Yeah. One of the things
I
commented on when it was sitting on Ken's desk was that this would be a monitor Josh would want to use.
But you're losing a lot of pixel density because you have, 24-inch displays now?
Yeah, I understand that, but I don't use that much. I mean, sure, I've got three monitors here, but one, you know, my right-hand monitor, I have hardly anything ever running on it, ever.
You're losing PPI is what I mean. Like, you have three, 24-inch 19 by 12 monitors now?
Yeah,
going to two 27-inch 1080p monitors is a stark difference in the amount of pixels on the screen.
Yeah, you're kind of losing some.
I'm old, and my eyesight is growing dim.
I see.
And so it's not as big of a deal.
What about the general?
Let me tell you the worst part about it.
Okay. Yes.
Okay, it's FreeSync too, right?
Yeah.
You've got
need a new GPU, Josh.
Who the hell has AMD Vega 64 to drive this?
Not a lot of people.
Not many people at all.
But I mean, it's hard to hold that against FreeSync 2 monitors in general, right?
I know, but it's disappointing.
Yeah, yeah. What about you made some comments on the general gaming experience of this. That was actually pretty good, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a while since I've taken a look at an ultra-wide display. Game support has increased a lot. Like, I was playing a lot of modern sort of AAA titles. Like, Far Cry 5 has really good ultra-wide support. Like, when you get in a plane or, like, a helicopter or a car, it's really nice to have that additional aspect ratio, and it handles it well when you're shooting. There's some games like Civ 6 that just put the UI elements to the corner of the screen, which is really ridiculous on this display because you're kind of either, if you don't have a super high
DPI mouse. Gotta have a big mouse pad.
Yeah, you're just constantly left and right going back and forth, which is annoying. There are games like Ultra Watch, which purposely don't implement good 21:9:9 support because developers think it's cheating because you have the extra field of view.
Yeah.
Which in a competitive shooter, you could make that argument. But overall, I was surprised at how good the sort of ultra wide support is and that the work developers put into 21:9 support, they just didn't hard code it for that. It also applies to these wider monitors. They're smart about the implementations.
Interesting. And so we talked about the HDR support. productivity-wise, what were your thoughts on this? To me, especially have we had this conversation with Jim recently about how 1600 pixels was ideal and how it made a difference even over 1440 pixel height. Yeah. Now we're going back to 1080 height.
It just it doesn't – this monitor doesn't fill enough of my vertical field of view for me to want to use it.
It seems like this monitor is not one you would buy – or doing office work on.
Yeah, no, I think this is a gaming monitor. It's marketed as one, sure. And I think if that's your primary use, then it would be a good option. But yeah. If you're wanting to do a lot of work from home stuff, maybe not.
I'm
so
sorry,
much.
But 144 hertz, do you know how smooth your mouse action is?
Oh, yes, so yes, I do.
Actually, we do know.
Oh, it's so just.
We do know.
I'm stuck at 60 hertz with 12-year-old monitors.
When we wrote this, it was $948. Now it's like $990.
People commented on the article. They've seen it low 800s, mid-low 800s, which I think is a way more reasonable price. I think $1,000 is a little too much to ask for this display. But if you can get down to the $700, $800 range, you're interested in a display like this.
Yeah.
So I'd give it a look.
Yeah, I am a little bit disappointed in the HDR stuff. What was the other monitor we had? It was an LG something.
Yeah,
it was like our first HDR display we got in.
Yeah.
And even if you take all of the like Windows compatibility stuff out of the equation.
Which is better now with 1803.
Yeah, but even if you take all that out of it, like I didn't get any of the impression from that monitor or this monitor like I got when I bought that LG OLED HDR and we played Resident Evil 7 on it for the first time.
Yeah.
Right.
And I was like, holy crap.
Oh, it's like, you know, when we visited AMD 2-3 years ago at CES and they had the first HDR monitors, the TVs there. Yeah,
they were all TVs.
And you walked in and you looked at them and you're like, holy shit, that's really, that is.
You immediately knew that this was better. Yes.
Yeah.
It was as dramatic as going from SD to HD was back in the day.
Mm. With these, like we would have to like
okay, yeah, I think that's kind of
right. We would question if it was in HDR mode.
Yeah,
right. We'd be like, is it? And we were specifically looking for it and using content that would normally pop.
Yeah,
but
it's disappointing because what I don't want to happen to HDR is what happened to 3D. What happens to all of these things that are like.
Or VR.
VR, right. Marketed and then killed because of people who want, monitor companies that just want to attach it. And to be fair to Samsung, like they're meeting a spec.
Yeah.
And so it's technically it's the specs issue that
HDR 600?
Yeah, HDR 600, which is the middle HDR.
Yeah, display HDR 400.
There's a 400 option, which to me is baloney.
Like still can increase color gamut, I believe.
It's true, fair.
But that's part of it. At that point.
Yeah. Anyway, check out that review. I think you can come to your own conclusions there. We have several other HDR monitors and more stuff to talk about here on the podcast even. As we move on to, we'll quickly touch on the last story here. Chris posted a review of the Logitech G513. These are the mechanical gaming keyboards from Logitech, as I just said. But these are actually using Roamer G switches, but now there's two. There used to only be one. Now there's linear and tactile key switches. I personally have a strong distaste for linear key switches.
Yeah.
Tactile, I like.
Is it tactile with clicky or just feel? Is it a blue or a brown?
It's my key. It's their own switches, but like the last two keyboards I've had on my desk are Roamer G switches that only existed in tactile before this launch. They've just kind of reshuffled and renamed.
It's like the equivalent of a brown.
I don't know the answer to that.
It feels clicky.
It's always been different. They've always been quieter, but tactile, and that's what I appreciate. Mm-hmm. So, but this is the G513, so it's available in both of those derivatives, if you will. They kind of have a very minimal styling and design, as you can see here, which I actually really greatly appreciate. While as much as I liked the G910 that was on my desk for a long time, it had the hey, I'm a gamer look to it of, sharp angles and unnecessary accents like that. Some people like it. I didn't. But the keyboard feel was still great. So this has a lot of that. It's missing some multimedia function, right? If you kind of look up here, it doesn't have any of that. I think it has function key support for that, but I kind of like having dedicated buttons for that. Still has a good design.
It's a pretty looking keyboard, though.
It is. Like the stainless steel, like brushed metal finish on the back of it. Yeah. And it's heavy and weighty.
Industrial.
Yes. Which a heavyweight backplate in a mechanical keyboard actually helps a lot to make up for any potential downfalls the switches might have.
It removes bounce to your desk.
Solid tactile feel, even if it's a linear switch, you still get kind of the bottoming out, hitting something feel.
Yeah, agreed. It still uses the Logitech gaming software, which is still really good. The ability to have macro keys and all that type of setup, RGB, you know, keyboard coloring and all that.
I blame Ujesh.
For what?
For everything.
Okay, that's fair.
It's good.
He's accepting of that.
I blame him.
Yeah. That's fine. $144, $150 or so for both of these. I highly recommend them. I am a big fan of the Roamer G switches in general. Like I said, I've gone back and forth between a lot of keyboards as I try stuff out, but I always come back to a Logitech Roamer G of some kind. So no ad this week. We'll jump right into news, if you don't mind. Do you want me to do an ad? I can make one up.
Let's do an ED ad.
The thought has crossed. We almost did.
Education.
Came close.
Yes. Yeah. Education reform. No, not reform. I like it the way it is. I don't know what political spectrum I'm supposed to be on here. Anyway, Spectre has new stuff, and not the James Bond movie as Jeremy would insinuate.
This was, no, it wasn't Scott.
Yeah.
Scott.
Canadians.
Yeah.
No offense, Jeremy, but a little bit of offense.
Okay, we know we've got the better sense of humor anyways.
So here's a couple of things that stood out to me. So there was another variant of Spectre that was announced from the Google research group called Speculative Store Bypass, which is as fun to learn about as it sounds. This one, you know, AMD had a response, Intel had a response, ARM had a response. I was kind of surprised at how little uptake this news got.
Because everybody's just kind of like, you know.
Do we have Spectre fatigue?
It's like in the movie Clue when they find yet another dead body and they just kind of like, and they just kind of like walk off. That's basically it.
So there's a couple of things. One, if you're Intel, AMD, ARM, whoever, that's great to hear that there's Spectre fatigue, right? Like, oh, great. Nobody's going to crap all over us because of this. As a consumer, and if you're a consumer, you know, watchdog type of mentality person, you're like, actually, you want more media coverage of this. You want more people working on
this. One of these potentially has more of an impact than people might be thinking, I think. From what I was initially reading, at least.
So I had heard from a couple of people that this was coming. I didn't know exactly when it was, but I knew that all these processor companies were working on their fixes and mitigations and whatever you have. And AMD says it'll be patched as far back as Bulldozer. Intel has their security bulletin that's going to be fixed as far back as Nehalem. Obviously, Intel's the company that's been hit the hardest by the Spectre meltdown stuff in its entirety.
Right.
ARM is interesting in that they don't make the processors. They make the underlying architecture and the IP that their partners integrate. And so it's an interesting dichotomy with ARM in that they are both blameless and the most to blame for that ecosystem.
Right.
So, I've been told that very soon, by this summer, all of their RTL will be updated to support this stuff. RTL. Like fixes. The IP will be updated to fix or have the mitigations.
RTL are the files that they send to the guys who actually make the processors.
Yep.
You download the RTL, you put it in a fab printer, and you hit the control P.
Control P.
And it prints out the processors.
It's a little bit more than that, Eagle, but sure.
Yeah. And then you hit the auto route button.
But it's the same idea.
It's a really expensive
printer. So in other words, if their partners wanted to take that new RTL, revalidate, and ship any future processors with that fix, they'd be able to do it, right? So,
but now does that fix?
But they can't force people to do it.
Does that fix slow it down though?
No, a little bit. No, I think all indications are that the hardware mitigation is less impactful than the software mitigation.
Okay.
Well, that makes sense, but it's still going to be there.
No, I think they say it's in the noise, but it's a little bit of a performance decrease, but not
okay.
It's not like, you know, 20%. No, it's more like 1 to 5% depending on the workload.
Okay. Right.
So there's another Spectre. I saw something mixed in with one of these. I think it was the Variant 4 stuff where they were like, you know, that the default was going to be potentially not patched, or like the patch would be in place but not enabled, and it would be up to people. Yeah,
I hadn't heard anything about that yet. I haven't gotten any more clarification on it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, so it seemed like it wasn't, you know, a huge threat, at least for Variant 4.
Right. Yeah, we'll see. We'll be following up more on that, seeing what these guys say, and then how it affects the rest of our world. Before we get to the next story, we do have some more patron additions. Lieutenant Dan's legs.
Nice.
Just we found them.
Just pledged $1.99.
It took 500 episodes. We've been asking all these all these years.
$1.99. Thank you.
We have a pledge edit. Pledge edit from $10 to $13.37 from "The only deodorant I need is bacon fat."
Leet.
All right.
That is leet.
Rebecca Donahue pledged $10 as a new pledge. Thank you so much. And Fish Sticks just pledged $1.
Lieutenant Dan's
like fish sticks? Do you like fish sticks?
No, I don't like fish sticks.
Do you like
fish sticks? Bad to me.
Yeah, fair enough.
Very bad.
Thank you, guys, everybody. All right, so let's talk about some FreeSync stuff, some more of it. Samsung is updating their 2018 QLED TVs with FreeSync support.
Yeah.
This is something that we saw, when was this discussed? It was
a couple months ago.
It was a couple months ago.
Just it was CES. Around when the Xbox FreeSync support launched.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So it's the majority of Samsung's 2018 TVs. They go as low as the NU8000, which isn't technically a QLED TV, but it's like sort of their mid-range TVs. They don't go any lower than that with the firmware support.
So apparently they've released a firmware update, 1103, adds FreeSync option to the game mode menu.
Yeah, they don't have any information about what's in the firmware, but ratings confirmed today that they received the update to 1103. They have FreeSync option in the game menu, and they're currently testing it out.
I talked with AMD today, and they're like, "Huh, well, that wasn't supposed to happen yet."
It went out on the 21st.
So there was no, I think there was probably a coordinated launch occurring or potentially occurring, and now the guy who's supposed to be in charge of it's on vacation for the week, and they're like, "Oh well, this is great news." Regardless of the timing and marketing behind it, this is a really cool addition to the market.
Yeah,
right. Absolutely. So now, not only do you have the PC that supports it, the Xbox, as Ken pointed out, supports Xbox One supports FreeSync. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Are these TVs 60 hertz panels max, or do we know for sure yet? That's what I'm really curious about.
I think they're at least 1080p 120 hertz panels.
1080p.
You mean the panel or the interface to the panel?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to figure out.
Like to the set. That's the problem.
Yeah, I know that's the problem, but it's difficult to test that stuff on TVs.
Yeah, correct. I know.
So I don't know.
I mean, from what we know of them so far, just Samsung TVs in general.
I saw reference to them saying FreeSync up to 120 hertz in an article. Someone was quoting
There's
that.
There's two people in the chat that are saying that they're internally 120, 4K 120.
Internally, yes.
Well, you can't do 4K 120 regardless because the interface doesn't support it.
That's the thing. How many frames per second can you get over the wire to the set? What is it going to allow you to send it?
Got it.
Is the catch, right?
Yeah, if they're... Because these are HDMI. They're not DisplayPort TVs.
Correct.
So right.
But you would be HDMI able to 2.0. do 1080p 120 over HDMI 2.
Do 1080p 120 over that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which the Xbox also added support for recently.
Yeah.
It's 120
Interestingly,
hertz.
There's an ad on Amazon right there for this exact TV.
It's like I've been searching for it a bit.
It's right next to the article.
Oh, was that last year's model? Yeah.
No,
that's a current.
No, that's okay. It.
Interesting.
Because it's got the new picture on it.
Yeah. So we don't know. We don't actually know if this is FreeSync 2 support, which has stipulations like certain color gamut requirements and LFC.
Mm-hmm.
Just no details about it. And really.
AMD hasn't talked to the media about it officially yet.
Right.
Samsung clearly hasn't talked to the media about it.
We have no idea what the FreeSync range is.
No idea what the FreeSync range is.
Can it do HDR? while doing FreeSync?
I would you would bet a lot of money on that.
Surely
it
would have to, but we don't know you're for right. Sure. There's a chance that it doesn't. I look at this though as this is really beating NVIDIA
yes.
at its own game. This puts
a lot of pressure on NVIDIA.
That
all
BFG,
of a
what was it?
BFGD.
BFGD, the big format gaming displays yeah. that they showed at CES that were in a really rough form.
And you still can't
there,
buy them.
And you still can't buy them, and we have no indication of when you'll be able to buy them.
Right.
This is a proof point that an open standard can be useful and validated and accelerated
and
above
being
that.
And in shipping and in now shipping firmware from yeah. a major television producer.
Yeah, this is yeah, not I mean, this is not Wasabi Mango.
No. This is freaking Samsung.
This is it's Samsung. It's a guy, it's
yeah. that sell hundreds of thousands.
It's probably the LCDs largest year. TV manufacturer yeah. in the world.
Samsung, yeah.
I'm pretty sure
so.
They are.
I'd so say like, Samsung over LG.
So that's what yeah. I'm saying. That is significantly serious pressure yeah. on NVIDIA.
Like, and it's not just you know it's not just dependent on PC. They have the console, right?
Yeah.
And in theory, I would expect Sony to add that to the PS4 at some point would be right. my guess.
Right. Yeah. But if you want a PC with a discrete GPU driving your television in a variable yeah. refresh fashion,
I'm really, really eager to test this out. Not eager enough to go buy one yet, but I'm like right on that edge.
You thought about it.
I thought about it. But like more what I'm doing now is like say, hey AMD, do you want us to test this? All you need to do is send me whatever's the biggest model TV.
I think they make like a 70.
They make a 70? Yeah,
the
yeah.
one well, I was sort of pricing out is the 55-inch Q7, which yeah. is the second from the top. They have the Q8.
Yeah.
But the Q7 has been getting really good reviews, and the 55-inch is $1,700. Which is a lot of money. However, if you compare it to the next store,
well, we, before we get to that as well, we will say Acer. It was a good lead image. You didn't read the thing that was on the rundown.
You know the thing.
Oh. Acer.
I read Acer.
FreeSync Nitro displays. These are much less exciting, unfortunately, for Acer to follow up here because these are 1080p displays, 21, 23, 27 inch models, all of which are 4K,
or at least available in 4K.
Got it. These
the press
are not
releases. Sort of foggy.
Oh, and they're not they're not HDR displays, right?
No, no HDR, but the VGO is 144 hertz refresh rate, and the RGO is down to 75 as a max.
So that's 4K 144?
Well, see, and this is where it gets confusing, because that would be interesting, wouldn't it?
It's not.
Does it just it's say not. Up to 4K option?
Well, it says they're available in HD 1440p or 4K, but they don't sort of specify, does that mean the smallest model is the smallest resolution, if yeah. each of them are available in these resolutions, and when it says that there is a top refresh of 144 hertz, what does that apply to, and what's the compromise when you hit 4K?
But these are budget displays,
it's definitely
right?
not 4K.
Oh, hell yeah, they start right. at 130 for the 144 hertz yeah. and 170.
These are not pretty these awesome. Are not 4K 144
no,
hertz
they,
displays.
They can't be.
Yeah, not for $170.
But good to see budget displays now doing like
yeah.
budget FreeSync.
FreeSync
like,
for $130 yeah. is great.
Absolutely.
Don't get me wrong. Yes, I'm just saying, yeah, 4K. And these have got to be TN panels at that point. If you have a 4K display,
they
for
say they're IPS.
Really?
Which again just seems weird.
Well, some of them
I don't
might
know.
Be IPS.
You can get good IPSs for $80 to $90.
Really?
For 22
yeah.
inch,
but not 144 yeah. hertz.
They're, yeah. they're not 144, but yeah. I don't know. Maybe they're
making a push,
exploring undiscovered country here.
Yeah, yeah.
We need more cool. specs. Damn it, Jeremy! Come on,
oh, yeah,
get your shit together.
Yeah, damn it, Jeremy.
Yeah,
well, it's not like they'll return my emails or anything. And the press release is really, really bloody confusing.
So as we move back to the original transition that Ken had from the Samsung stuff. For a $1,700 TV,
girding my loins.
To the there's a couple of stories here, right? We have the Asus.
I know how to do that, by the way.
I saw
a cartoon with how you do that with your little dress sarong thing.
Both Asus and Acer have now had HDR. Oh wait.
All right, go ahead.
Acer and Asus have both have. HDR-enabled G-Sync display news come out. Asus actually sent out a press release announcing pricing and availability of their 27-inch G-Sync HDR display, the PG27UQ. whatever.
We saw this 2 years ago.
HDR,
CES 2016.
CES 2016, we saw
this. Was it really 2016?
Yes, it was 2016.
Not 2017?
No. Well, yes, then too, but the same panel.
So we saw it 3 years in a row? Because we just had CES.
Maybe it was 2017.
But okay. I think you're thinking CES 2017.
The past two CESs, we've seen this panel.
So it's been almost a year and a half since we first saw this stuff.
Yep. And also the Predator X27 is the same.
So what's interesting about this Asus one, Ken?
HDR 1000.
They are certified for display HDR 1000. Asus is claiming this is the world's first gaming monitor with display HDR 1000 certification. That's a little disingenuous, as last 2 weeks ago we saw a Philips 43-inch monitor. I guess they're not considering that a gaming monitor, maybe because it's 43 inches, maybe because it's not, like, it doesn't have variable refresh.
Yeah.
So Asus is kind of stretching it here.
It's $2,000.
But it's the second HDR or display HDR 1000 certified monitor, which is nice. It's using a 384 zone backlight with a peak brightness of 1000 nits.
Kind of.
So like we were talking about earlier, it's a...
So the, if I remember back, the HDR 1000 spec is, this is 1000 nits, 10%, right?
Yeah.
I 10% of the screen at 1000 nits, yeah, or a flash of 1000 nits for full screen, and then sustained at 800?
I don't remember the sustained.
Okay. I can go back and look at the previous story. I think it was either 600 or 800. 97% DCI P3 color space, 99% Adobe RGB color space. Those
couldn't really ask for a whole lot more in a monitor.
That's really, really good.
It's 600 nits long duration.
Okay. Asus is saying these are calibrated screens. These are like pre-calibrated out of the box.
Delta E less than 3.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not hard to hit.
Same.
Yeah.
Ambient lighting control. They have the laser on the bottom of it, of course. They look like ROG monitors.
You can project an ROG logo onto your wall. So, sweet. You know, you can... the first thing you do is turn that shit off, I guess.
So before I mention the price, I will say, having seen, you know, early production models of this at CES and whatnot, mm-hmm, they look amazing.
These are the ones that do what the televisions do.
Well, we don't know what the televisions do yet. What do you mean?
What?
Like the HDR, in other words.
Oh, that look impressive to see.
It looks like it's HDR.
I agree.
Right? As opposed to the other panels we were talking about earlier, where we questioned.
Right.
Yeah.
This is a $2,000 monitor.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
How much was the ROG Swift?
$1,000, I think.
When it launched, $1,000.
Yep.
And that was 144 hertz kind of TN? Or was it like a VA?
It was TN.
Yeah, it was TN. But it was good TN.
It was a really good TN.
Yeah.
Okay. So now this is a $2,000 display that is, in my view, much later to market than we expected.
Yep.
You know, having seen it in January of 2017.
But wait, what's the refresh on these?
144 hertz.
Is it
4K? So this is 4K, 144 hertz, DisplayPort, HDR.
There's a caveat. You can only run at 96 hertz with HDR enabled.
Yep.
Because of DisplayPort 1.4.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Trying to fit more bits per pixel.
Like, it's 4K 96.
4K at 96 hertz would be very difficult to drive at this point, too. But as a future-proof $2,000 investment.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So are these, does that make him DP 1.3?
4.
Okay.
Yeah, 1.4.
But there is a standard that exists that's just maybe not implemented by a lot of places that is higher bandwidth.
HDMI 2.1 will do it, I believe.
This monitor doesn't.
No.
Yeah, okay. So along with the Asus announcement, we haven't seen an official Acer announcement yet, but we did see a pre-order go up on UX website.
They also listed it on the Acer store with the same details this week.
This is actually the first place we saw that $2,000 price tag was for the Predator X27 4K, or better known as the Predator X27 BMII-PHZX.
Love their parts.
What the hell? Now, this says release date of June 1st.
Yeah.
The Asus press release said end of June.
Said late June.
Late June.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm curious, will the Acer one actually ship June 1st?
Yeah.
I kind of don't think it will. You think it will?
I think it will.
I kind of don't think it will.
I think they might.
They've already been so delayed, and like we heard several times that it's going to be May. That like
it's going to be May.
By the end of May. By the end of May. By the end of May. That June 1st seems believable to me.
Yeah. Hey, PC Perspective is live now.
Yeah.
You know what the big problem is with all this?
So this was the January 2017 video we did, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Josh. What's got you?
I am going to delay my next monitor
until all this is figured out.
Yet again, for another 6 to 8 months.
Yeah, don't forget there's a 200 hertz ultra wide coming.
Says who? Acer?
It's the same that we saw two CESs ago. Also,
you're killing me, Smalls.
1440p.
Yeah, but think ultra how much wide. That's
all I ever wanted was updated monitors from my 2005 series HP.
Yeah.
IPS.
The problem is that I think both of those new types of panels are both going to be like $2,000.
Well, I guess they could also be 2,000. I was thinking they'd be more.
I think the ultra wide would be more.
Maybe.
If they're released anywhere close to the same time period.
It's a lower resolution than this. Is the thing.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah. I would think it would be at least 2,000.
Ultra wides cost more.
Yeah.
For the given sort of similarities.
Smaller production runs.
I think the 2K is kind of high.
It's not kind of high. It's like really high.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
Like this should be.
Maybe
should
let's
be
say they can't
tops.
Make. They can't. They're having issues making a lot of these, and they're going to get as much as they can get out of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. My indications are that production is the holdup. It's not that they were just like, we don't really feel like doing it.
I kind of wish that they would drop all the HDR BS and just give us faster refresh 4K.
No. These are going to be the first monitors that HDR probably works well on.
Yeah. HDR. That's the important part. To me, I don't give a crap about the 4K.
You want the
as
HDR
much
more?
As I care about the HDR. HDR is top. Like real good HDR is way more important to me than 4K and way more important to me than 144 versus 100 hertz or whatever it is, right?
Okay. If this was
or 96 versus 75 as it might be with HDR mode.
HDR 1440p 165 hertz for $1,000, I'd buy one.
For 1,000? So you're saying half the price that they're currently selling it?
Yeah.
Sure.
I'd probably be interested too.
No, I said 1440p and stuff.
Yeah, 1440p. Oh, I see.
I gave a concession.
Yeah. I'm not even worried about the 4K.
Yeah. No. Yes, I'm with you there.
Yeah.
I would do 25 by 14, 144, 165 hertz, whatever it is. Real HDR.
Yeah.
$1,000. There's your selling point. But my guess is that the panel production, they had to pick one for panel production and go for it. Mm-hmm. I'd be curious if these monitors will run at a higher refresh at a lower resolution.
They should.
Because in theory, the bandwidth is there. So you'd be able to hit at least 144 rather than 96 at 25 by 14.
Yeah. You should be able to do.
Yeah. But I just haven't seen,
they would have to tell us that they would be able to do that, right? Like the panel would have to be able to negotiate that in a different way, right?
Like we haven't seen the other G-Sync panels do that historically. Like usually it's correct. This is your max refresh rate. It doesn't matter if you lower.
Correct.
You know?
You're right.
Yeah.
So it seems likely that in the month of June, we'll see Acer and Asus, these monitors finally exist. Not February or March like we thought. Not
Q1.
2017 like we thought, but mid-2018. And they're going to be really expensive.
Okay, but I'm still happy because
yes, please.
This is improvement from 2005 to 2015 that we saw nothing.
True. Well, I don't think we saw nothing. I think VRR is a pretty significant addition.
Well, high refresh rates, VRR. You know, think of
resolution and HDR and color gamuts and that. It was all.
I think Ken's right. The VRR and the high refresh rate were those changes and that happened in that time span.
Like larger than 1080p resolutions became mainstream.
Yeah. I mean, it was 25 by 14, the Korean displays that kind of came out and pushed that at low cost.
Still what's on my desk at home.
I agree with you, Josh, that like, I don't know, 4K has taken way longer than I thought it would take. But to be fair, we don't have the GPUs to really do it well yet. Right? A Titan XP is still a struggle to push games 60 hertz, 4K, high image quality settings.
Sure.
So, whatever. Yes, do I wish we had killed off every 1080p display that has existed? Absolutely. But
what else would I test with?
I don't know. Three of them, apparently.
640 by...
All right, let's move on. We got to get through the rest of this crap. Jeremy, tell me about DRAM prices. Are they going way down?
They may. At least going down.
It's not good enough.
Oh, you know, there's still servers and cell phones chewing them all up.
Yeah.
But apparently the cryptocurrency guys are not buying like they used to be. It's like there were a bunch of robberies and the price fell or something. I no idea. So the Nikkei is saying that they've seen serious drops in demand, which means there is now RAM stacking up at factories, yeah, which means lower prices for us in a little bit.
Yeah.
And also mentioned the same thing trend is going on with GPUs, where their stores actually have them in stock and are they're sitting there and not selling.
Good.
Which is an amazing change.
Good. Now, I will say, I just looked up, went to Coinbase. It's down to $7,600 for Bitcoin, which is down 18% this month. But if you look at it year on year, it's still up 205%.
True.
So keep that in mind. But if you look at it over the last, I don't know, since December, it went from 19,000 down to 7,000. So there's, yes, hopefully that sticks with it. What else we have? Oh, Alan, Intel and Micron jointly announced QLC NAND flash. This is quad level cell, which based on a very intuitive tweet that I heard is 33%
more. 30%
more
bits per cell than, yeah. Than TLC.
Math.
Because math, yes. People have been talking about, 4 bits per cell.
It's a logical progression. We went from years, single, right? To multi, which, yeah, was not two, but multi to triple. Now quad.
Technically, everything else is supposed to be multi-level cell.
It's all ML.
Yeah.
But we never had a two-level cell.
But it's...
And it was never branded or called that.
There was never two-level... That's the other thing. It's kind of a misnomer. The whole level cell thing is, like, wrong now. Because it's really 4 bits per cell. Which is actually 16 levels, yeah, right? So, but instead of calling it 16 level cell, like that's, I don't know.
Anyway, I understand.
Quad
so bit level
people
cell.
People have talked about this for years. It's just that implementing it is much harder because you're trying to take, a very small volume of space, store electrons in it on, yep, a piece of silicone. Yeah.
Whatever. Silicon.
I like the 96 levels.
Yeah.
Also, works for grouting your tub.
So you're trying to do that, but you're also trying to do it to such a precise degree that you can distinguish between 16 different voltages. Like once those bits are stored there, right?
Yeah.
Which is tricky in practice, right? It takes time. You really have to, like, your flash really has to be kind of on point, right? Like, cells have to not leak as much. You're, like, very controlled. Like the, you know, that whole thing where your yields are getting better and better and you're tuning in your process over time and everything. Like, sure, you really have to have, sure, you have to just have to be all over it to get to the point where you can be storing 4 bits per cell. So Intel and Micron are apparently now at this point, to the point where they can comfortably say that Intel is like, okay, well, we're doing it. We're not announcing products yet, but like we're making the flash. It's in production. And Micron also went as far, I don't think we had the story in the show notes, but Micron went as far as to announce upcoming enterprise QLC SATA SSDs.
Okay.
Meant for, this is meant for more like content delivery sort of stuff, right? You're not, when you store 4 bits per cell, you can't do a bunch of writes and have crazy high endurance. Just like with TLC, there's always a trade-off.
Reduction.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, so there's your trade-off. But Micron's more than happy to sell some SATA SSDs that, enterprise type customers can put into their existing systems that might have actually had SATA hard drives in there. And they just maybe want some speedier storage or just something that's, a little bit more reliable or robust compared to spinning Rust, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's kind of why they're going the SATA route first, because they're figuring, don't expect crazy random write performance, but your read performance is going to be pretty good. And we see that with, even when you go all the way up to TLC flash, the place where you see the performance hit is in the writes. The right. Reads are generally like top speed no matter,
yeah,
what.
Yeah.
So same kind of thing can be expected for QLC. Just the endurance is not going to be great. Don't go run out, buy one of those Micron Enterprise QLC SSDs if you come across one and start like installing your OS to it. But
if you do it once, it's fine.
Well, yeah. Steam game drive, sure.
Yeah.
But no, not something, not like the drive you're hammering on every day.
Okay.
So, I mean, good stuff, right? Just the fact that that will be a thing. And, you know, who knows?
I like cheaper SSDs, 10 cents a gig. It's coming soon.
I mean, that's how you get there, right?
For
like,
real.
You have to somehow take less die space, right? And then the other part of the announcement is that they're working on 96 layer.
Oh, okay. That's a separate thing than QLC. Yeah, it's not QLC working, and 96 layer.
No,
okay.
No. Well, they included it in the announcement, but they were not in production of 96 layer. They were just like,
got it.
Right. You know, we're doing 64
where are we at now.
64. Yeah, okay. We're at 64 now. And which that's what they're going to do 4 bits per cell on is their right. Their existing 64 layer tech. But you know, potentially another 50% more capacity per die once they can start doing,
I like it,
96 layer.
Right? 10 cents per gig. Here we come.
Yeah.
What comes after quad?
I mean, I don't even. It's
it'd be
an S.
Sept.
Sept.
Hexa.
But then that's single level cell. So I don't know what they're gonna do if they ever get there. SLC is 1 bit per cell.
I got nothing. NZXT announces the H500 and H500i cases with tempered glass. Sebastian wrote this up. This is a kind of like a budget-friendly version of a lot of the features that made the H700i so interesting. These are $69 for the standard model, $99 for the cam-powered H500i, which I like the designs of these. They completely hide the power supply unit down there on that side of the door. Still lots of visual access, if you will. Looks like it comes with the ability to mount your graphics card vertically.
Is that an optional bracket?
Oh, it's optional.
If you so desire.
And honestly, that's what you should want to do, right?
If you want to choke your airflow of your graphics card.
Yeah, as you do in order to make it visually appealing, because that's the part you spent the most money on, right? All steel construction, available in 4-color combos, tempered glass side panels, wire management, of course, with a patent-pending cable management system. Water cooling insulation is simplified using removable bracket for either all-in-one CPU coolers or custom loop configurations. I like that idea. Kind of a removable bracket you attach stuff to and then slide back into place.
Wow. Yes.
Kind of latches, as opposed to oddly having to hold one hand up top and the screwdriver in the
bottom.
Three
hands to do it.
Yeah. You almost need two people to install an all-in-one cooler in cases a lot of times, which I find very, very, very frustrating. Mm-hmm. The H500i has a smart device, built-in RGB and digital fan controller, Hue Plus, Grid Plus functionality, adaptive noise reduction, fan control mode, cam-powered RGB lighting, and vertical GPU mount optional, showcases the gaming power inside. Good-looking case, early June. I'm sure we'll see it covered more in-depth at Computex, so good stuff there. NVIDIA has a new, I think that
a bit of a typo.
Rundown is a little wrong there. It's a GTX 1050, 3 gigabytes. GTX 1050
on the mind for some reason.
Transpose that pretty well.
Yeah.
So this is kind of a quiet introduction. No launches, no reviews. It is a 3 gigabyte version, GDDR5 of the 1050. The new card, as Tim wrote this up for us, the new card is closer to the GTX 1050 Ti than the name would suggest, as it uses the same 768 CUDA cores rather than the 640 of the GTX 1050 2 gigabyte. GDDR5 memory is where the card differs from the 1050 Ti, though as NVIDIA has cut the number of memory controllers by one, along with corresponding ROP and cache, meaning the 1050 3 gig has a smaller memory bus and less memory bandwidth than the 1050 2 gig. And 1050 Ti 4 gig. So
more people on a smaller bus.
If you're properly confused, you should be. They basically added more memory, but it's a tighter memory bus. Yeah. Which obviously affects your peak memory bandwidth. So the 1050 Ti 3 gig is a 96-bit memory bus. It's been a long time since I've seen anything less than 128-bit on like a G4. You know, what I would consider a mainstream GeForce or Radeon branded product. 7 gigabit GDDR5, 84 gigabytes per second of total memory bandwidth versus the other previously released cards, 128-bit memory bus, and 112 gigabytes per second of bandwidth. So Josh, any, do you think there's any, I mean, there's obviously going to be performance hit for it, but do you think this is a rebalancing of GPU performance with memory capability and that we shouldn't see a huge reduction in bandwidth comparatively or in performance comparatively?
Probably not. I think the biggest thing is most games require a whole lot more frame buffer than
than memory bandwidth.
Exactly. And so you've got compression technologies in there, and you've got a little bit more, you know, teraflops, and you may see in certain applications a hit, but I think it's going to be more than offset by having extra memory. I mean, we've played all, Far Cry 5, other stuff, which requires more local memory.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been doing some notebook game testing recently, and you'll be amazed the amount of games that bitch if you have less or 2 gigs or less of VRAM.
Yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned the teraflops. Well, I mean,
they did this a long time ago. I'm trying to remember, like, the 580 or 680 series. They put out a version, like a GTS or something, and I bought one that had more memory on the card, but smaller bus.
I don't remember what card that was.
Trying to remember what card it was. It was a long time ago.
Yeah. I mean,
This
one's confusing still as well, because the new 1050 3 gig has a 2.33 teraflop rating, while the 1050 Ti has a 2.14 teraflop rating. So it actually has a higher, peak theoretical throughput and compute capability, though it has, less memory bandwidth than it, and 1 gig less frame buffer.
Look at those clocks, though.
The clock speeds are surprisingly high, right? They're higher than all the other parts on this list for certain. Still 75 watt TDP, no external power connection. Targeted pricing estimated right up against the AMD RX 560. Maybe this is a good sign that there's, a return of some competitive, any kind of competition for this point.
Test nonetheless.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Agreed. Agreed.
Especially if you can get it for 160.
And, second to final story, the Intel Z390 chipset was accidentally leaked by Intel's own website.
Seems to happen a lot.
It does seem to happen more often than it should. Jeremy, is there anything that stands out about this?
Francois leaves Intel, and suddenly we get leaks.
Shocking, isn't it?
I think not.
Indeed.
It's pretty quick to go through because it really hasn't changed all that much. One thing they've done is take advantage of the fact that Coffee Lake actually has a decent graphics card on it. So it'll do 3 HDMI or DP outputs with 10-bit color HDR support and up to 4K resolutions. No graphics card required, which is, good if you're looking to start a build that you're going to build onto. And it comes with gigabit NICs, a pair of them up to max, which, is nice to see.
Does this one add wireless?
Yes.
As well? So this is, it integrates wireless AC, 802.11ac, and Bluetooth 5 into the chipset, which I believe is new.
We saw desktop. That with I don't know if it's both the H and B series chipsets for
like the H and B 370.
I think it's the H series chipsets had it, and the new notebook chipsets have it.
Yes. So this is the first Z series to have it added in there.
Correct.
Did they mention anything about support for 8-core processors in this? I don't think they did in this. We had seen other leaks about, hey, the Z390 is what's going to support, 8-core Kaby Lake, whatever you want to call it. Coffee Lake. What the hell are we on now? Coffee Lake.
Coffee.
Yeah.
All right. You bring this up. Let's put it down in stone. Let's place your bets.
Say it out loud.
Will the 8-core Coffee Lake work on Z370? I say yes.
Ooh, that's a good one.
I'm being optimistic.
I say...
Being very optimistic. I say probably not, unfortunately.
I'm going to hope.
Oh, sure, I'll hope too.
I'm going to say yes, that they will, because I have maybe unrealistic faith that Intel has been learning from the pushback from the community that you can't just do this every time.
I don't think they learned quick enough, which is why I say no.
I mean, yes, it might be that this chipset is done and the roadmap was in place before they started that learning, and but, that the power delivery system is different.
We've
and whatever.
We've seen Z270 boards with hacked UEFIs running 8700Ks if they have
your
the proper VRMs.
Your question was, will it officially support,
yes.
though?
Not and will yes, it hack. I say it will officially support it.
Got it. Hmm. Yeah. I'm going to say yes.
I want to say yes because it's a decision they can make so late in the game by just releasing an EFI that works.
That's true.
As long as the power delivery and all that stuff is set up correctly for
but
it. That's
how much more do you think the TDP for the 8-part,
I don't know,
8-core part is going to be over
hopefully
the
not
part.
Much. Because, you know,
it's going to be 150
cooler
watts, which
ecosystem
is blow
exists.
The VRM.
No, I don't think it's going to work on 8 series motherboards.
No, but definitely won't that.
No.
I don't know.
So an aside here.
All right.
So this is a new chipset. We're still on, it's a 1 gigabit NIC on board.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you want 10 gigabit, you pay.
Yeah, but that's the case everywhere still.
So that is the case. It's a gig on board across the board, both Intel and AMD.
Well, that's not going to stop motherboard makers from including, like, you know, an X550 Intel NIC.
Right. No, I was wondering because
or something.
I thought, like, Threadripper had
the
multiple
problem with
10s.
The Intel stuff is the amount of PCIe lanes coming from the CPU and using of, DMA?
DMI
from the CPU to the chipset. And everything hanging off of that chipset and sharing that DMI.
Yeah,
it's kind of only grim. 4 lanes PCIe. Yeah.
You're really right. Because you bottleneck that with the 10 gig.
Okay, how does M.2 typically route, Alan, on the Intel platform?
Through the chipset.
Yeah, it's usually through the chipset.
Yeah. Then we're looking at 10G going through where?
If it was built in to the platform, it would be through the chipset. Is the thing like that's, yeah, that's why I was saying
still DMI3, so you're limited.
DMI.
Yeah,
that's the one positive thing that AMD has going for them, especially with their Threadripper. And I would imagine their next generation Threadripper stuff. A lot of those motherboards are going to be 10G directly to
God, I hope so.
The CPU.
That would be amazing.
And that's the way around it, right? You build the NIC into the CPU.
You don't even need to NIC into the CPU. You just have dedicated PCIe lanes because there's 32 of things.
But then you're back to just, you know, now the
or 64.
Wasn't there something about that came out with the Ryzen embedded stuff that there are actually optional 10 gig PHYs? Yeah.
That's what Alex was talking about, was that there's 4 10 gigy. I think it was 2 or 4.
It's four.
Because it's four for
the embedded side that are not enabled on the consumer side.
Mm. I think it's a trade-off between PCIe lanes and using those PHYs.
I would agree with that sentiment. I believe that is the case.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Hmm.
But I'm not positive.
The Ethernet PHYs on the Zen platform are dedicated outside the PCI.
It might be the case. Yeah. But no consumer board has integrated. As far as I know, the Epic platforms don't integrate it.
Yeah.
Right? It's only like for the embedded.
I mean, you've got so many lanes on the Epic.
We have an Epic server in here now from Supermicro, and it's got 4 1 gigabit.
What about that ASRock Tai Chi Plus, whatever,
well, that's
470?
Just, that's just
got the 10G.
I'm imagining AMD doesn't allow them to access that.
That's just
on the
using a Quantia NIC on board.
Yeah. But okay. You can integrate an external chip on any platform you want.
Because they had ASRock had a X370 board, I believe, with a 10 gig NIC. That was the Quantia stuff.
Yeah.
And even if it's on the die and they just have to turn it on, it's not going to be free. You're not going to get a 40 gig thing just like thrown in.
You
for
mean
free.
Like cost wise, they would charge extra.
It'd
for
be
it.
Like a license or something. Yeah.
I mean, if you're AMD, if it's on there, I could see, you know, enabling one of those for consumer products as just another reason to get people to try to move away from Intel and build more boards on it. But you still have to have. Even if you've got the PHY, it's the PHY that's on there, right?
I think so.
Yeah, it's like
The PHY is going to be the actual.
Yeah. The PHY is the external part that has to exist on the board still.
Yeah. Right.
It's the...
Oh, you're saying,
though. But what is the limiting factor of all this? Not the motherboard. What is the limiting factor?
Ends.
CPU.
Money. No. Well, it's money in switches. Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah. But, I mean, yes, 10 gig is still expensive for implementation on the network side. Trust us, we know. But still... I mean, it's never stopped a motherboard guy from putting a feature on there that nobody really needs or can use yet in order to put it on the box and sell more products.
We have RGB for that now.
But yeah, well, not for long. That'll,
when you know, SATA Express was used extensively.
Yes, it was. And not, I would bet zero SATA Express devices were ever sold to people who listen to this podcast.
Probably not. I saw multiple SATA Express demos at CES. That was it.
Were we ever sent a SATA Express device?
No, but at one point there was... Well, okay.
I don't think we ever got the dev board that was floating around.
You had one for testing.
Was it an external dock?
It was a thing...
Yeah, I think it was a dock or
It was a thing that connected to the SATA Express port, but gave you a PCI Express port to plug a card into and a SATA port to plug. It's like, here, you want to connect these two things through this one thing that's designed to connect two things through it? Here's the two separate ports for you to plug those two separate things into and connect them to the system. Have fun. There was supposed to be like a Western Digital hard drive at one point with like a, you know, a SATA hard drive with like a PCI Express.
There was a NAS that was compatible with it, but I can't think of which one it was.
Let's do our last story. CryoRig.
Let us.
CryoRig Frostbit. Finally, what we've all been waiting for, the M.2 cooler.
No.
For Does it rotate like a saw blade? Users.
Oh, it better be an active cooler.
What I hope is that those fins rotate.
Nope.
Yep.
They spin.
It's got to spin.
Spinning ball of death.
So, this is the stupidest thing I have ever seen.
CryoRig Frostbit M.2 cooler is the first dual heat pipe cooler that uses a thin 1 millimeter heat pipe that spreads heat across a small heat spreader and a thicker heat pipe that draws heat away to a larger external heat sink.
Yeah, so you're... So you're making sure that whole
thing is heavier than the drive you've got.
It's only weighs 56 grams. The angle of the external circular heatsink and heat pipe can be manually adjusted so that it can fit in the systems with large CPU or GPU coolers. And CryoRig's website notes that the Frostbit features 38 fins and is rated at 12 watts of cooling power.
Well, M.2 SSDs. It also
doubles as a fidget spinner.
M.2 SSDs, which draw their power from 3.3 volts. Are kind of not allowed to draw more than 6 watts, like without breaking the freaking motherboard.
Okay.
Just saying. So there's that. And more importantly, hey, Jeremy, how many degrees C is it in your room there?
It's got to be 22 or so.
Okay. 22, huh? If you take an M.2 SSD and you very efficiently cool the whole thing, that would probably bring. SSD that only it's rated for 12 watts. SSDs only dissipate like five or six at the most when they're fully active, right? So this could probably bring the SSD pretty close to room temperature, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Well, what I'm expecting is it's going to use the heat from my GPU to start heating up.
Oh, well, yeah.
M.2. So it's actually going to be a heat sink for some other part.
So here's the thing. So it's colder than 25°C in your room there. So let's just round up a little to 25°C. If you take a consumer SSD and you run it at 25 degrees Celsius, specifically the flash chips, you just cut the lifetime of that SSD in half. You get half the endurance from the flash if you run it at 25°C.
Because it's got to heat up, baby, to change those bits.
No, because it's harder to tunnel electrons through an insulator when it's colder. And you wear the insulator faster. So you're wearing out the flash faster. Twice as fast.
Which part of what I said was not
a different way of saying that. But it doesn't heat it up, is my point.
So what you're saying is we need a deep freeze and an SSD endurance test.
So like when Intel tests their flash memory and they want to wear it out quicker to see how long it lasts within a reasonable amount of time, they cool it off.
Yeah.
And they do the same writes to it, and then it wears out quicker.
So, like I said, we need a deep freeze and an SSD endurance test.
Oh, God.
Well, I
mean,
now that you bring it up, Al, just looking at here, most of my drives are running at about 30°C right now.
Yeah, and your drives are not actively cooled.
No, they're just getting fans passed over it. That's the only cooling it's getting.
Yeah, but not like with a big old heatsink and like heat pipes and crap on it, right? So if you run them at 25, you're just going to wear them out quicker. They're going to die faster. Don't do it. It's like the stupidest thing ever. Now, if you want to take this thing and make absolutely sure that you don't ever possibly thermal throttle your SSD, just make sure that whatever the thermal pad is for that thing is only touching the controller. Do not let it sit.
Which it could be. We just don't know.
Right. But, I mean, my argument
it's
there...
It's probably not.
My argument there is you shouldn't even be doing that because you want the flash to run warmer while you're using the SSD. The controller only really heats up while you're using the SSD. And pretty much all modern SSDs come with a... Like, the label itself, if you look at it from the edge, there's a copper layer in there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a heat, built-in heat spreader designed to transfer the heat from the controller over to the rest of the area, including basically, it's usually the flash, right? So if anything, the SSD just automatically makes itself have better endurance because whenever it is active, it warms up the flash has an easier job of writing.
Mm.
And then when it's idle, the flash cools off, which actually helps it retain its bits for longer. You get less leakage at lower temperatures, right?
Josh also
gets less leakage gets at less lower temperatures. At low temperatures. Yeah, so just...
I've got a lot of insulation, so, yeah.
Yeah.
If you're really cold, retaining your fluids actually keeps you warmer longer, just like flash.
Yeah.
Is that what you're telling me? It's the same idea.
Basically,
until you drop that big solid brick.
Basically, any normal, like, even as it is right now, in order for me to get any given SSD to thermally throttle, I have to do continuous, like, synthetic workload to it. Nothing that I, like, I've never had any of the SSDs, like, just in normal use, get to the point where they're thermal throttling. And that's even my use, which is kind of heavy usage, just right. Doing normal stuff. Right, just like downing a Steam game to it, putting content on it, just running stuff off of it.
So
it
when NASA runs this stuff, they need to put it next to the thermal generator, right?
Or just get direct sunlight on it.
When Apollo 14 finally gets up there.
No, 18.
We stopped at 17? I knew it wasn't 13. I'm just
anyway.
So you don't want to buy this, is that what you're telling me?
No. No,
I'm going to buy one for every drive.
You're going to buy one for some
every
RGBs?
Every okay. drive we have.
Can I glue it to a hard drive?
Every M.2 drive is going to have one of these installed on it. All right, let's get to our picks of the week. And I'm really disappointed because I wanted to talk about this longer than we have. So last week, or over the weekend, I guess, essentially, I went to Disney World with my wife and daughter and wife's family. And
about the mistress? The mistress come along?
No, I left her at home this time. It makes things complicated. With the mother-in-law there, you know, you don't want to have that discussion.
Yeah.
So I finally ran through The Void, which is the company that creates these VR experiences. They have one called Star Wars Secrets of the Empire that I didn't realize had actually been in production since – or had been in
use
since 2016. That had been available to use since, like, I think November of 2016 or something like that.
I think it's like a new campaign. For the Star Wars stuff.
Yes. I think the Star Wars one was in 2016.
No, I think this is a new Star Wars campaign compared to the previous one.
Maybe.
I think they updated it recently.
I don't know if that's true, but whatever. Regardless.
Who cares? Some people get tired of playing the same level.
So the idea here is, if you don't know what this is, it is you put on a VR headset, but it's a whole helmet with headphones, microphone, all that. You have a... backpack on that is essentially a
gaming PC,
gaming laptop. I think it's the last thing we saw was a GTX 980.
Yeah.
Maybe I've upgraded since then, but it's a GTX 980 based machine. And you wear this outfit essentially. If you're watching the video version, you can see what it is.
Super cool.
And it,
there's no gloves and there's no,
so it does hand tracking from, Magic Leap.
Leap motion.
Hand finger tracking. And this is not like a VR experience with Vive and Rift where you set up in a 10 by 10 or a 15 by 15 room and everything happens in that space. They have it set up where you're in a big, environment where you physically walk through the space. They have set up rooms that are just gray painted walls, mm-hmm. With doorways and handles and droids and, you know, bars to hold onto and stuff. And you walk through the space. But when you're looking at it through your VR headset, it is an alternate. It is AR.
And they have the augmented. Walls. They have the walls in the right place.
Yeah, the walls in the right place. If there's a wall that I see in the virtual space, I reach out and I'm touching a wall.
Yeah.
I hate you.
You're in there with three other people. You know, you're all, you know, posing as stormtroopers, which obviously makes sense because that gives you an excuse to have a backpack on and a helmet. And so my brother-in-law was there, and you see him as a stormtrooper. You reach out, you touch his shoulder. His shoulder is there, right? Obviously, mm-hmm. It's not plastic like a stormtrooper costume would be, but whatever. It's pretty cool. And there's just some really cool stuff that happens in it. Like, you get put in this room. The narrator starts talking to you about the story. A door opens, and you have to walk through it. And it's having done a lot of VR, it's a very unnerving thing to have trust and faith that I'm not going to just walk into a wall, right? So you move very slowly. I had my hand kind of out in front of me, you know, and you walk through this door.
Like, what would you say, like, the square footage, like, of the thing was?
Like, was it like a house? I don't know, because you, as the person, even once you were done, you took the headset off and I was trying to peek around at things. I think there are multiple, they can run multiple concurrent. So it was probably mirrored on two, maybe three sides. I don't know.
Like, what was the size of your thing?
You were probably in 10 rooms that were.
Oh, crap.
8x8, 10x10.
Yeah, but 10 rooms. It's like, you know, we're used to VR now, like
not,
one room.
What I'm not positive of, that you could reuse the room.
Oh, sure.
You could come in and again from a different angle and it'd be mapped as a completely different space.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Just depending on how they negotiate the maze or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's still very much a story-driven thing. It's linear. There's not like I ask them if I come out, if I do it again, can I get a different ending? Can you go a different way? No, right. None of that really exists yet. It's all the
same thing. Okay.
But one of the moments that stood out to me was one of the very first things you do. They kind of, in a 20-minute thing, they have to kind of walk you through, like, door opens, you can walk through the space. It's real.
Mm-hmm. No, now and then you go into a medical routine and you do Lamaze with a woman in
you have pregnant. To show that you can interact with the device or with the real world, right? So there's a handle to activate the elevator. Mm-hmm. And I was doing the thing that you do in VR with the Vive, where you reach out until your hand avatar kind of looks like it's near it. And you kind of just like grip, right? Like
I understand, like pull the trigger.
In VR, I'm not really touching a thing, right? So I grab it, but it wasn't working. And I realized I went a little bit further. There was the handle.
You actually
clink it down. It clunks. Boom. The elevator moves. Right. Huh.
That's pretty cool.
There's a place where there's a safety bar in front of you that you can grab and lean onto and lean over and look down and all that. It was really cool. There's a place where part of the walkway is melting lava and you have to rush across it faster. When you walk across it, they make it so that it feels squishy on that part of the ground, right, as opposed to solid.
Yeah.
When you don't start with a gun. When you pick up a gun, it's in a gun rack.
And you pick up an actual gun.
And you reach, and there's an actual, you know, gun type device that you are picking up and you're holding like it. And when you look at it in the VR space, it looks like a stormtrooper rifle. And it was $35 for, you know, 20, 25 minutes of experience.
Probably worth every penny.
It was worth every dollar of it. If you are in, I think they exist at Disney World, Disneyland. One other place for the Star Wars one, and then they have a Ghostbusters version of this, which is very similar, you know, it's all the same technology. It's in, like, Dubai and New York and Toronto and maybe Seattle or Portland or something like that, too. It's called The Void. It was really cool, and it's easy to see after doing that how VR and AR will change how that type of entertainment stuff happens at parks or whatever. You know, the next step is to make it a 100x100 room that's open air and there's 20 people walking around instead of four. And, you know, you interact in different ways. You have virtual laser tag and these types of things. It was really neat to have work. And
so when are we building one?
Man, I tell you what, I tried to ask them a lot about the technologies behind it and nobody wanted to say anything. There's an Oculus logo in some of the stuff. Yeah. So, you know, it's powered by Oculus.
You know, it's Oculus. There's been other like promo videos for like their stuff, and you know, it's Oculus, you know, it's Leap.
But it's, it's very unique in that. Again, having used the Rift, having used the Vive, using Oculus Go, yeah, all these other ones that
they're blowing room scale out of the water.
Oh, I mean, it's a totally different.
Yeah,
it's a totally different type thing. So, highly encourage everybody to check it out. I'll do some more writing on it at a future time. So,
I want to take you to shoot a teammate.
So actually, that's one of the first things you have to do when you pick up the gun. Like, it doesn't, when you pick up the gun, the story doesn't progress until somebody accidentally hits the trigger and like sets off an alarm, and that's when like the action starts in the thing. And so, you know, me and my brother-in-law and one of my wife's cousins were kind of like looking around at stuff like, this is really cool. And my brother-in-law hits the trigger and like, you know, the wall lights up on fire and then the alarm goes off and then, oh, you've got to get out of here. The door opens and, you know, something. I imagine something else would happen if you just literally sit there and do nothing.
I mean, he's a stormtrooper, so of course he missed.
Yes. They did do a very funny like intro about like the ground rules of, you know, don't run in the space. They were like, just like a real stormtrooper, you don't run, you don't jump, you don't crouch, things like that.
Don't hit people with a gun.
You don't actually aim well, things like that. So
you don't actually aim well.
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead. I talked for too long on that. Jeremy, what's your pick?
Pretty much the exact opposite, more or less, in a way.
Yeah.
This is for people who can't run around while they're playing games. It's the Xbox Adaptive Controller. Now, at first glance, it looks like a giant controller about the size of an Xbox with two giant buttons and a D-pad on it. And who really cares?
Yeah.
On the back of this thing is 19 3.5mm jacks, which are designed to accept anything, any sort of input. So you've seen mobility aids where essentially you're blowing in a tube to be able to drive your wheelchair.
Yeah.
Plug it into this. You can game now.
That's a lot of jacks.
Like, there they are right there.
Yeah, holy crap.
So the idea is, it doesn't matter what kind of interface you need, it'll work.
Sweet.
It's not quite out yet. It's pretty much done. And, I mean, it looks a little prototypey, but chances are it's going to look a lot like this.
The video they put out for this is awesome. Like, yeah, if you watch the promo video for this about how they built it and then the people they are able to enable for normal gaming and being able to play every game and all that type of stuff is super awesome. And it's worth watching. If you have, even if you have no disabilities and you have nothing of the sort, it's worth watching to see how other people have to deal with this stuff. Mm-hmm. And to see a company like Microsoft, like, they're not going to make money on this, right? This is not a profitable venture for them.
No.
This is something, it's an enablement, it's a research.
Boy, is it a quality of life improvement for a lot of people?
Oh, yeah.
For not a huge price. Well, except
they got to play Xbox games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, it'll work on PC.
Yeah, it should work on PC.
Yeah, it will. Which means all of a sudden people are going to really be playing Dead Souls again and bragging about how they beat it with a carrot.
Yeah. Very cool stuff. Really interesting.
This is an awesome project. Check it out.
Who's next? The HP SSD.
That's pretty
cheap. Come on. 512 gigs for what? How much?
115.
115. That's
not 51.
That's 23 cents a gig.
That's pretty nice. And that's not even a sale price, man.
You're right.
Yeah.
Oh, HP, I love you. Well, in ways, but, you know, it's a solid SSD and cheap, 512 gigs. It's just, you know,
they're getting the job done.
Storage makes me happy. 3-year limited warranty.
They have M.2 version, M.2 SATA.
Yeah, but that's M.2 SATA.
Yeah, they're all those S700s or SATA one way or the other.
Yeah.
Is the S700 less than the Pro? Yeah, you can get a 500 gig for $99.
Yep.
Wow.
19.8 cents per gig. Getting there. It's a 10 cent class.
10 cent class. Don't forget, there is that Micron. What was it? We ordered one.
What was
the
Micron 1100?
Yeah,
but it's only really in a 2 terabyte and it's a $300 drive, which is good cost per gig, but you still have to spend $300 on a drive.
Yeah. Right.
Yep.
2 terabytes, 313.
Yeah.
No, it's been cheaper than that. It's been like $275 recently, like that, around there.
But that's only if you're, you know, have more budget, obviously.
Right.
But you're getting a crap load of storage. for that. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. The 2 terabytes are now...
That's $13.75, 13 cents a gig.
Yeah, it's like, whoa.
Like, that was affordable. That was a year ago, affordable. That was 1 terabyte.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Alan.
Yep, so there's like 12 hours left on this Kickstarter for the Myst 25th Anniversary Collection.
They only got
they're going to make it.
Yeah, they only got 2.6
million. 2.6
million
out of their requested 247,500, which is a very specific number. But sure.
Yeah.
I don't know why you wouldn't just round up the other $2,500, but okay.
They've been adding a whole bunch of stuff because, like, I mean, these are, like, generally nice developers. So, like, they've been adding stuff to, like, all of the tiers, like, not just to, like, the higher tiers. As people have just been pouring money into this thing.
$4 million.
Yeah. They basically were just like, we were just going to do the soundtrack at a higher tier, but forget it. They're just like, even if you do a dollar, you get, like, the soundtrack or whatever.
They added 5 3D printable items for Myst.
Ooh.
3D printable items?
I didn't know they did that.
Like, they're not going to send you the physical good.
But no, but they'll send you the,
they will.
The file. Can you? Are you in?
Oh, yeah.
All right, because I'm probably going to get the files.
As long as my printer is somehow magically working at that point.
Because I'm in.
3D printers are even worse than regular
printers. I think I'm in for the writer.
Yeah. Have you sent this to Hewlett yet? Because this is... right up his alley.
Comes with a book. I forgot.
What version comes with the book?
The printing.
Do you want the book or the book with the animated?
I want the book with the digital screen.
Okay, that's the maintainer.
How much does that cost me?
$170.
Must not be a very good screen.
Not the point.
The bookmaker is $100, but you still get the book, but it just doesn't have the screen built in.
Yeah, here you go. It's a replica. $247,500. Let's see. That's 2,500 orders of $99 tier. Okay. So, all right.
Well, Josh, email that to...
not $100 tier.
Email that to Hewlett.
Yeah, he's in Boston at a robotics thing. You don't think
he would stop what he's doing for 30 seconds?
You're not stalking him, are you?
Kick into a Kickstarter?
Well, he's on Twitter, so I have no idea.
No, okay.
Fair.
Ooh, a G.
$1,000.
What do I get for $1,000?
More downloads and a scarab.
Didn't they have a tier that was like art from the game, like an art cell?
That's all gone. Oh. Yeah. That was like $1,000.
Yeah, but I still think that was pretty good for something like that.
It was so many pieces of original concept art, like the actual concept art from like Riven, I think. But they only had so much of the concept art, right? So
yeah. Apparently they had 25 of them.
Yeah. And I wasn't going to do the writer one because I was like, I don't really need like an actual trinket because it's like a fountain pen that was in the game.
What would you put on the back of your wall without more trinkets?
Well, no, it's not that. It's like, but they ended up adding other stuff to it and it kind of like tempted me. And I was like, okay, fine.
All right. So that's it.
That's it.
Myst 25th Anniversary Collection.
Yep. I mean, I already pretty much own all those games already, but... Well, they're all going to be updated They're all going to be updated to run like on.
No, this is everybody's life now. We buy everything.
Episode 500. Alan's still talking about Myst. I feel like every 75 episodes or so, Alan brings up Myst.
It's a special place in my heart because, like,
twice a year. That seems pretty common.
I had joined the military and like didn't do anything with PCs at all for like 2 years because I had to go through all this crazy training and like you just don't have time to mess around with PCs.
Yeah, right?
And like when I finally got to the tail end of all that, and my roommate bought a PC, Myst was like the game. That's like when that came out, right? Mm-hmm. And so like that's what I jumped back into when I sort of like got back and like started playing some games on PC.
Right.
And it was at the time just phenomenal, right? Like Myst was the shit back then.
It was interesting.
It was just insanity that you were getting that out of a computer at the time, right? Mm-hmm. It was just unheard of.
Turns out pre-rendered.
At
the time, we didn't even understand what that meant.
Imagine how long it took to render.
Well, that's true.
There was an article about that. It took them a long time. Yeah.
All right, everybody. That is it for the entirety of PC Perspective Podcast. Forgot to mention at the beginning of the show that we were killing it after 500 episodes. I think I said that.
Thank God.
In like episode 6 or 7, Jeremy, we have to go back and listen to where I said. But I think I said if we ever make it to 500, we're killing it. This is the sunset episode.
We can finally have our Wednesday nights
I
back.
I need my Wednesdays or, back.
It's not actually true. We'll have another episode next week.
Yeah, because I need more excuses to drink beer.
Yeah, you definitely do. Yeah, for sure. All right, everybody, that's going
to
be
have
it.
Have you looked at my face?
We try not
unfortunately,
to.
Unfortunately.
Thank you.
I mean, I saw it in person even recently, which was
horrific.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Hot, sweaty, and full of barbecue.
I had to go to the magic place, most magical place on earth, in order to get past it. So,
but right. We did hit a really hipster bar.
Oh,
in Austin?
No. Any bar you have to go to where you have to slide a fake library wall to the side? I'm just like, whatever. Just serve me the drink. Mm. We don't have to be uppity about this. Anyway. Thanks, everybody. We will we'll be back next week for another episode. It's time to start on the next 500. Good night.